Welcome to Cocktails and Canoes.
That's right, the podcast for two best friends with many opinions talk about sport that we both love.
We're Kel and Will.
We might as well. We always do.
We're at our first live.
Oh, we're already
recording. We're on. We are.
Don't make it weird.
It's been weird. We're an hour behind schedule because we couldn't get our equipment to work.
Well, not quite an hour because it's 7:38. We were supposed to get going at 6:45.
I was late. My husband was late.
Yeah, I knew. I saw him. I was at NAC. He was
still working.
No, he was drinking.
Stop it.
Oh yeah, he had a full cooler. He was.
You lie.
I do not. He was sitting behind Billy's boat. Like, check out these 150s. Check out these 150s. Let's put on this catamaran. They're sick. Let's put these 150s on the transom. These catamarans rebuilt. They're sick. They're so sick. Bryce.
Don't make it weird.
I'm not wrong, right?
Oh my goodness. You guys, it's our first live podcast. We're trying our best here. We're back.
Take that, Bryce.
Bad with the equipment, but we've got the one and only broadcast brothers.
The two and only. Yeah.
Coming in hot. We're going to recap a lot of things, but I have to ask to unmute. Can you unmute yourself on the other side of the table there?
How does this go smoother when it's
when we're not, you guys? If you could see our setup right now, we've got my giant desktop, we have a laptop, we have two microphones.
Your giant desktop? No.
This is a desktop. The computer, a laptop, a bottle of tequila, and half a did you bring this? Is when you said you had cocktails, you brought the half bottle of Tropicana, no, pineapple mango splash.
It was full before you came. You were super late.
Who do we got on the other side of the table, William?
The broadcast brothers, Joe, Naholava, and Justin Fisaga. My cracking biscuits.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Canoes and Cocktail. We're your hosts today. Joe Naholava and Justin Fisaga. We're here with our esteemed guest.
Boats and booze. Yeah.
Boats and booze. It's cocktails, canoes, boats and booze.
This is actually pretty delicious, I guess.
Is it really?
Yeah, I'm happy. It's mango.
This is about as
splash.
I'm staying with the White Claws. I know it compromised my man.
I know this is a podcast, but it kind of feels like we're supposed to play Battleship.
Right? I know, right?
It kind of does.
F4.
Yep. B2.
If they could see it, I haven't played Battleship in a long time, but that'd be a good time. But all right, so you're drinking we got the pineapple mango splash, the Pellegrino, the 1800. It's a little bit of a redneck concoction. You got the White Claws, is the classiest thing of the bunch.
Yeah,
I know.
We got the Sierra Nevadas on tap, ready for us when we do it. But we got a few things to get into regarding the recent races, the V1 races. But before we do that, we got to get to know our guests, our friends. We've been talking for about an hour
trying to get this thing going,
and if we could have recorded it,
you would have run a lot more.
It would have been fucking great. Joe, let's start with you. Why don't you fill us in on where'd you come from? How'd you get into paddling? Give us the long, short.
How did you end up across the table from us?
Oh man, I don't
know where to start. Well, no, you do. Where'd you grow up?
So, from Eva Beach, Oahu, I grew up paddling in a club called Pu'ula Arir, kind of similar to Castaways, actually. You know, just the kind of you.
How so?
It's the canoe club where you.
Where you just fuck off all the time?
Yeah, it's family oriented.
Right on.
On the parking lot, you know, I went there to go skimboard and
canoe
practice after. Started when I was about 14, 15.
Same as me. Yeah.
High school.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, we're on the southwest side of Oahu. So we used to paddle out towards like the mouth of Pearl Harbor. on Malia's. And it was a good day if your coach brought the Naya,
right?
Yeah,
that was considered a good canoe.
Yeah,
my dad had a Makia, so I got to use it like I don't know, maybe like once a month.
Dennis Campbell still paddles his.
I know, yeah,
I see it.
Yeah, was that the one it had an American flag on it? Had paint?
No, that was the Hookie. The okay. Hookie, the American flag, the Makia he's got is still got the shark.
Yeah,
on it. Yeah, know, yep.
But yeah, so pretty humble beginnings as far as my upbringing with paddling, and then after high school, after I graduated high school, I went to the Coast Guard, and then I got based in San Francisco, and then I started paddling SFOCC, and those guys really took me under their wing and learned how to paddle in the cold weather and the wind chop, and then fast forward about 13 years later, I'm sitting on a table drinking a tequila.
This is everything you ever hoped for.
The pinnacle of your paddling career.
Yeah. So it's kind of in a nutshell. Yeah.
Okay. That's a good little.
Your second time being on the podcast.
Yeah.
Because we did the Buffalo with you afterwards.
Yep.
Justin.
But Justin, this is Justin's first time.
Yeah.
First time with us.
My goal is to beat Ryland Hart's record being on the podcast. So
we can make.
we need numbers. Call Ryland.
Let's see. Grew up in Crestline, California.
Hang on. Just back up for a second. Where is Crestline?
Crestline is in the local San Bernardino Mountains next to Lake Arrowhead. And
what's that, where Bruce's truck broke down?
Yeah,
close right. to where Bruce's truck broke down. Covered that. Yes. Yeah, wow.
Okay. And grew up up there since I was, I think, 10 months old. My parents bought the house there in Crestline. And my dad would take us surfing every weekend religiously. So learned how to surf really young, been in the water my whole life.
You were literally the mountains to see family, like that people talk about. You have to do it once in your life. You were doing it every weekend.
Every weekend surfing. I was a lifeguard up there for a while. And so I've been in the water a lot in my life. Started paddling when I was probably 21, I think, 21 mm-hmm. with Yamula. And Dora was my novice coach. She was great novice coach. And then some of the men on the beach, which probably everybody knows, yell and scream at each other, and I didn't want any part of it. So I left. bought a Fusion OC1 and paddled that around in Dana for a long time because I lived in Laguna Hills. And then one day we're paddling in Newport with my dad and my sister. And my dad was a surfboard shaper for Russell Surfboards in Newport in the 70s. Shaped with a lot of guys that are out there still today. Steve Bain at Infinity and Bruce Jones. He's passed, but a lot of the old shapers. And my dad surfed with the Lima Kalama all the time on the numbered streets in Newport. So we paddled by Newport Outrigger one day, and the Kalamas are out there yelling at us to come. And that's how my career started with Newport, and ran the club there for, a while with Uncle Tubby's tutelage, and kind of brought that club back from the ashes a little bit. Made a lot of cool friends and had a kid and decided to do a different kind of club, Castaways, where we just have fun paddling and enjoy the better parts of paddling, I feel.
Yeah.
And not super competitive, but fun. And we're still there to help the community all the time. We participate in everything we can. But then one night I get a call from Micah Scott. This was in 2021. And he goes, we're going to go to Oktoberfest. I go, okay, let's go. I go, who are we meeting? He goes, we're going to go pick up Joe Naholova. And I go, Joe Naholova, I haven't met him yet, but by his last name, I think I got, I got to be ready for some scrapping. He's not the big last name, big Hawaiian team. And then, I don't know, I think the Bowman began right there. And Oktoberfest 2020.
Oh, so you're not just professional friends, you're friends.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I thought this was just like a.
Yeah, so the Broadcast Brothers thing happened because when
Will and I are just professional friends, for the record. So, just in case you were wondering.
This is an agreement.
This is an agreement that our parents made us.
I had Ryan and Nico had asked me to do the live feed for the race.
Yes.
And I asked Joe, I said, hey, man, I'm looking forward to seeing you out there paddling B1. You know, you need a canoe. I got a canoe if you need to borrow. I don't know if I want to do it. He goes, how about if I do the live feed with you? I said, man, that would be great, because I feel like in all sports broadcasting, the two-man team is always the best way to go.
Yep.
Having one person talking to a camera the whole time doesn't work. Mm-hmm. You know, yep. It's like,
hey, no offense, Clay.
No, no offense. But
we hoi pa here too.
Yeah.
Because
you look at Joe Rogan and Daniel Cormier, right?
Yeah.
You and I are kind of like that.
You need
it. Or a team. Al Michaels and John McEnroe.
You do look fat one of the You do look a little bit like DC. I can see it.
I don't know if I can wrestle that good. So yeah, I mean, first broadcast was test kind of
shaky.
Second one, I think, went really good.
Yeah.
It's getting better.
And then whatever happens after that, it will be a lot of fun.
But this was the excitement, right? Like, this was like when Vohi Video first came out with their stuff, like 2015, 14-ish. Yeah. I mean, I ate that up like candy, because it was the first stuff that actually showed paddling for the entirety of
the race,
right. Or at least the majority of the race. And it wasn't just about advertising naming your sponsor.
Excitement in his voice.
Because that's what it was. That's what it was, though.
Right? Well, let's rewind even further than that. So going back to when I was like that 14 to 16 year old, remember Pacific Paddler magazine?
Yeah.
I grew up on it.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Me too. I still think
we still have a bunch of copies at the house.
Pacific Paddler magazines. That was the one. And then Tahitian 689. I mean, once YouTube became a thing, being able to kind of watch
from the world.
Mainly Tahiti. Right.
And then
Pacific Paddler magazines. Like, I remember going to Kai Bartlett's parents' house on Kauai, and they used to have baskets of Pacific Paddler magazines, and we would go every year for the Kauai World Challenge. You would just thumb through those things, you know. Like
Air Napoleon
is
a broken in half one.
That was the ad for the Allstate insurance. But then once the Vohis came around, that changed the game for me, especially because all of a sudden, I mean, I still to this day, all I watch is Premier League highlights and Vohi video. I'm watching from 2016. To current, and there hasn't been much lately. I don't know why, but it's just
a little mix up with Vohi right now. I think, and I don't know what exactly the situation is, but rumor on the street is that Stevie Boy is going to take over a lot of that, because I guess Andre is not doing it anymore.
All right,
he's just like over it.
There was some sort of hubbub with Kevin CJ and Andre.
Okay.
And way Andre was calling a race. I don't know exactly what the situation is.
Because we don't speak French.
No. But I just hear the little tidbits of stories around. I don't know what it is.
Ne nous parlez pas français.
But last time Steve was here, he was talking about, they were talking about next week, you knew that Stevie might be doing the live feed.
He's not racing.
I don't know. You know, it's just a lot of talk.
There's some translation issues going on.
I don't know. But
they might need some backups, you know.
Oh, Use this as your audition tape.
At the point when they were talking about it, I said, well, you know, Steve, if you need some English guys down there,
he's on it. Hey, let's talk to Squirrel. We got some funding. Come on.
Guys down.
Come on.
So. I mean, there's a void needs to be filled on.
Yeah, and that's going back to we were talking about this recently. That's the beauty of this. We get to share the joy. I mean, that's what I got out of reading those Pacific Paddler magazines, and even though I couldn't understand Andre Vohi, you hear the enthusiasm, right?
Right.
And, oh, he's into it.
Yeah.
Into it.
The excitement.
And so, if we can share that joy with our audience, you know,
just the fact that we can watch
right
a race,
yeah,
right, live,
yeah,
as it's happening,
yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
And, and we know
tell
we
the
got
story.
Yeah,
every single time is going to get a little bit better, a little bit better, and it's not the talking, it's the video. The yeah. quality is we're going to get better and better and better and better.
Right. Yeah. Yeah,
the talking, I mean, just having a race where you can watch the actual race and not have somebody standing in front of the camera and block his clutch, because that's the shit that I eat up. I'm a nerd for this. I'm a nerd and a narcissist as well when it comes to paddling, because as soon as I finished the race, I got home and went straight to YouTube and I watched that shit all over again.
Yeah.
And I'm reliving it.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's what I nerd out on.
And that makes you a narcissist. I think that just you just enjoy. Well, you are, but
right.
No, it just makes you interested. Like, it's like you go play a basketball game, or I'm sure, you know, like you're gonna go back and look at your footage.
Right.
You know, you're gonna go back and look at you're just reliving it. What, you know, see what you did wrong when you lost to Brent.
But I didn't.
Oh, true.
Twice.
Well, and so speaking of that, Will, how was that experience like with you going back and watching it? Like, what did you think?
I could see moments where I thought that I needed to go harder.
Wait, stop talking about yourself. We're talking about the broadcast.
Yeah.
Oh.
So what?
I think you needed to keep the camera on me longer. Yeah, personally, right. Yeah.
Don't believe it or not, Joe and I talked about this last night, and there is a really fun rivalry with you and Brent, which is so fun to highlight.
It's finally fun.
Yeah.
The cool thing about this last race, as 14 miles spread out, is that we had like a procession of doubles that were running through.
Yeah.
We had a bunch of guys in their own competition, which was actually really cool. So I was telling, you know, Jonah, like, man, we need to back down and highlight these guys a little bit more in the longer race, because there's so much battles in the field that are so fun to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's fun to watch the top guys, of course. You know, it's like you watch them run, and it's, you know, they're moving fast, and you know, they're the guys that everyone wants to see, but there's so much more to see behind it.
Yeah.
So it's like
it was like prom dates.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's so much behind it, which is really cool to see. And I think that you know, going forward, especially in a 21 mile race, a 20 some odd mile race we're getting into, we'll have time to explore
exactly
more depth and different powers.
Yep.
But I think, you know, like, if you were watching the last few races, Joe, if you were to pick a guy that, I wouldn't say MVP, but somebody that you that was stoked on paddling, that you watched, I'm sure it's different than me.
Okay.
But let's take the whole field into account.
Yeah.
Who would you pick as somebody that was improved, or was, you know, it could be front pack, back pack, mid pack, whatever. We saw everybody.
Well, my first thought is Will, because he beat Brent.
Yeah.
This poor guy.
Hey, but if you guys read the Daily Pilot, it said that Brent Campbell took the lead at an early start.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Yeah, I said it.
That is true, though. That is true.
I'm just going to say this. The only reason why I agreed to do this initially with Nico and Ryan, and, you know, it was all going around, was the fact that Ryan made a point to say that this is not about the top paddlers. This is about, you know, opening up V1 and promoting all that stuff, right? So
that was the whole idea.
That took me, like, I'm like, okay, I can support this, you know.
Yes.
I mean, I love being a fanboy, and I love all that stuff, and I love watching guys paddle. I love all those things. But I also like the fact that there's a whole cluster of guys in the middle that are growing in the sport, you know. And so the one guy that stands out to me in two races is Wade Wilford.
Yes.
This guy's paddling a 60-pound training boat.
Yeah. Yep.
Smile on his face, never complains.
Freaking so happy to be there.
His time per mile was so much faster this race than last race.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's so excited about this. I see him and I'm like, man, I'm stoked on the guy.
Yep.
You know, he's just doing it because he wants to do it and it's fun. Right, we get to watch the top guys race, and that's fun.
Yeah.
But when you see some of these guys come through mid pack, you're like, "Whoa, wow, this is really cool. They're so stoked on it.
Yep.
And that for me is, there's a lot of nuts and bolts we haven't tightened down yet. Yep. In the whole thing, you know?
Well, then how many Dragon Boat paddlers, like,
right?
Like the Dragon Boat paddling community, John, and then we also had, you know, Michael Chang, Zoe.
It's flying. As I've been told.
Okay.
The real athletes.
Oh, the Dragon Boat paddlers are the real athletes. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but they are mechanically sound.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Not emotionally sound.
But and I've said this 100 times. Well, you said this 100 times.
Taylor parties.
When they get the feel, they're gonna connect. Right.
Yeah.
Can I say that.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
What are you asking?
What I'm saying is Dragon Boat paddlers have fundamental basics that are
she,
so good.
Right when you were saying that, she asked me, she said Dragon Boaters party.
I heard Taylor parties. He's the party guy at the after party.
So it kind of trounced your
I'm so sorry.
I was like, yeah, I think they do. I don't know.
Don't make it weird.
It is pretty cool to see that, like, the breezy boy.
Yeah.
Right? I think it's awesome.
They're all good ones now. And
well, I just think that is
really admire them.
Yeah, so do I.
And if there's others out there, paddle for NAC. Don't worry about your kahis and your lokahis and this Long Beach business and all those ones up in Lanakila and all that.
Come
to NAC. We'll take care.
The best thing for me is that I'm part of Castaways, which is not a score canoe club. I have no allegiances to anybody.
Yeah.
So I can say whatever the fuck I want to say.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's right.
That's
almost
right.
Had a spit take back.
So, brother, so to ask, to properly answer your question, you actually took my first answer was Woodwade. It's funny. You and I are such good friends.
Yeah,
we look at you. He's Alex.
Same thing. You guys.
So I got a fun story.
The first V1, not the first, right? Yeah. But
one of
the first V1s over. It was him and Spencer to California.
Right.
Okay. And everyone's like, why are you rubber rigging your boat all day?
Yeah. He's the first guy that ever taught me how to build canoes.
Yeah, really?
Yes.
Yep. When I was 19 or 20 years old at Kamano Composites, I worked one day a week, Tuesdays. I worked one afternoon a week. And he was the guy that taught me how to do deck dresses or guts. And I was the annoying guy that was on his side, and I was hired
trying to learn.
Well,
he was your Judson.
Pity, basically. He was my Judson.
You his Judson,
and he showed me how to, you know, after the layup had been done, the two halves were still separated. He taught me how to put in the blocks for the pedals, put in the stringer, put in the what do you call it for the cables, the tubing that ran from the front to the back for your cables and your rudder. He was the guy that was still there, and he taught me how to do all that shit. And then that spiraled into my obsession. It wasn't at the time. I really didn't care much for it, to be honest. At the time, I didn't realize it had taken
valuable.
But he was the guy. He was the one that held my hand, and I messed up a lot. And he could hold his head together. And that's one thing I struggle with, is like, he had patience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
it's really cool to see that. Cause I randomly see him out of NAC, right?
Yeah.
When we're coming off our early morning, Saturday workouts, he'd be coming in with his, you know, whatever V1 canoe he had.
Yep.
And I just, you know, randomly talk story with him, but it was real small, like in transition. He's like, I'm coming, he's going.
Yeah.
And it's just, and he never races, right? And it's just really nice to
until
see him.
Until now.
I know. I saw him at the first race. And I was like, Alex, we finally have a race for you. Right? Like, this is your race.
He's into it, man. But
that
sparks a different interest in different people.
Yep.
Which is really cool to see.
Yep.
Like, you know, the first race was 69 or what?
Yeah, 65. And I honestly thought the second race was going to be 30 people.
Right.
I was like, hey, this race is going to be 5 miles longer. It's going to be Newport Pier. We know that it did have to change.
Yeah.
But I thought we were going to. Yeah, it was fine. Yeah. So for the listeners who may not have paid attention, this race was originally supposed to be from NAC to Newport Pier and back to NAC, which would have been about 14 miles. The race was supposed to start at 10:30. At about 8:30, 9 o'clock, the fog started rolling in and it was just socked in. And we just safely could.
It was
socked in. We safely could not send anybody out there. And so we had to pivot and do 13 miles inside the harbor, and nobody hates me yet. So
it was fine.
No, it was good.
I think, to shift gears,
yeah,
the women. Right.
Right.
Yep.
That was really,
yeah, nice women's field this race.
Yeah.
Very competitive.
Super competitive. You know, we have also the second race also was a qualifier for Samoa. So
there was
a little bit of incentive. People came in for that.
Yep.
And what I'm hoping though is that for the third race in long distance, there is enough, you know, just the feel of the race hopefully brings more people back in.
Yep.
Too.
Yep.
Because there's some really good Wahinis out there.
You ever been this small?
Yeah, bunch of times.
Right. It's pretty good.
Insane.
Do they have discos?
You know, just watch out for the fuck up thing is. Don't make fun of them because they would stomp you into the dirt.
The what? Is that like the faparoo?
No, I don't know.
You don't know what faparoo is?
No.
It's like fermented cabbage.
Oh, no.
No, it's fermented fish.
Oh, no.
That tastes like cabbage.
It's totally different.
Tahiti?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. The first time I was in Samoa, just a quick story for Will. First time I was in Samoa, we were at seawall drinking right in a pier right there on the harbor. And Australian Navy men were in town. They had one of their ships were there.
Looking like Tom.
And they were out drinking, doing their thing. And this Australian man was making fun of this Fafa Finge man woman. And we're sitting on the seawall watching, and this guy dressed in a muumuu beat the shit out of this Australian dude. And we were just going, I just couldn't believe it. I was 18 years old, and I couldn't believe it. Anyway, so it's a safe place to go.
Yes!
Let's go!
You know, we're talking about the Rams game.
Yeah, there, right? Yeah.
And then let's go back to when we're on the way in the Uber driver.
Yeah.
And we called up Kelly.
Oh God!
And how we Mike and I, we volunteered Justin as our team
manager.
Yeah.
team manager. Yeah, and that's how we're going to Samoa.
Wow. Well, I guess on Sunday I'm going for the next practice.
Yep.
Mike came over last Sunday and asked me if I could be involved. I said no problem.
This Sunday?
Correct.
I can't make it.
Oh well, Will's off the team.
Well, actually, real quick, Will. Since we're on the topic of Samoa, Will qualified as the Open Men's V1 finalist. So you will.
Unless Danny decides he wants to go.
Danny is Masters.
He said no.
Danny qualified for Masters.
Yeah.
I have different intel.
I was there when Danny said 99% I can't go.
So you got that 0.1% chance.
Robbie, you haven't been around him enough.
But Danny won the Masters because he's 40. And for IVF, you're on V1, you're stuck in the, you can't race up or down, I believe. You're stuck in your age.
Brent was devastated.
So Brent is the Masters alternate. So if Danny doesn't go, Brent would get his spot.
I thought he could take mine.
No, your alternate
is Noam.
Noam.
Oh, no.
Hunter, technically, I think is still Hawaii because of how long he's lived here. I believe the area. It's some sort of thing.
Hold on to
that. Yes. But also, actually, you know what, guys? To be honest, Hunter, so even though we had 50 people in this race, not everyone was vying for a spot because you had to put your name in.
Yeah, right.
But so Noam is actually the alternate for Open Men.
Right on.
Yeah. And then Justice won the 19 and under.
Yeah, he's a beast.
And then for the women, April.
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah, April came out from the East Coast. She's already made the V6 team. Yeah. She's gone to sprints last year.
Joe and I tried to find her to talk to her. But what she did was She finished the race.
Yeah.
And then she turned around and went for another paddle.
Yeah, she was for like a 10-mile.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's her training schedule is insane.
Where did, yeah. Did she meet by Niti?
Yes.
Yeah, she did. By like,
oh, mid. Shit.
You know, I actually did. I forgot to tell you, but yeah. I actually did talk to her after.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and so she just, she played the, you know, her, she stuck to, speaking of her training.
Yeah, she knew.
She kind of just stuck to her fitness. You know, she's like, all right, look, I was paying attention to my heart rate and my speed. I honestly didn't do anything different.
Yeah.
I think that little lap.
Yeah.
The two laps really.
She just got into the rhythm.
Yeah.
She's so scientific.
Yeah.
She is. She is so disciplined. Yes. So smart.
You can tell by the way she paddles.
Everything yeah. is so analytical. It's data. Yeah. She knows exactly what she's doing. Yeah. She knows how her body's going to react.
Yeah.
And like, that's just her app. She's just an athlete yeah. and she understands what to do.
She's like Danny with long hair.
Yes. A little bit prettier. A little bit prettier. Prettier. But no, she's, I mean, the effort that she's put in, she knows exactly.
That I see in stand up paddleboard and V1. Like I feel like
I could see that.
Elite,
I could see that.
Stand up paddleboard people, you know, athletes are good at V1, and then I think the opposite. Like you look at Tahiti, right? A lot of their champions are excellent stand up paddleboard paddlers.
Yeah,
it's maybe it's anticipation in the feel and the way that the board moves and the canoe moves. And
no, they just like to suffer.
Okay, well that's fine too, but.
It's like to make it hard on themselves.
To me, it kind of reminds me of like, there's that like, you know, that talk about like skiers, they hop on the snowboard, they kind of snowboard, but snowboarders, they can hop on the ski and flourish.
Uh-huh.
I feel like a lot of, I mean, I don't know this for sure, but a lot of the V1 paddlers in Tahiti, they get on the sand.
They do it all the time.
They do it all, but not competitive.
Well,
I feel like they must get on the stand up.
The French are very competitive in that world.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, all of Europe is
right.
You know,
right.
But it, you know, they were kind of the Tahitians were hopping on it. What was that brand Mistral?
Yeah,
that was like a thing for a little bit.
That's right.
But it was like a short stint. You know, I don't know if there was.
I feel like Tahiti's just looking for a way to be outside of canoe paddling because that's all they got there. So it's like expanded, right? What's the next step? Where are we going to go? What
exposure?
Right. How do we grow?
Yeah.
How do we make a living off of this enough to, you know, do whatever? That's our biggest sport.
Yeah.
They got to have figured it out.
They're definitely not beating Samoan rugby. I'll tell you that.
But
but you know what I'm saying, right? The South Pacific is very unique in certain things.
They got the worst soccer.
For sure.
Tahitians?
Yeah, I know.
The Samoans, bro. Look at your lips.
What are you saying?
You take my ankles out.
Yeah, I know. Daniel Cormier, I know.
But they got beach soccer.
They do.
What, number two in the world, I think.
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
Yeah.
And then for the, going back to the other women, though.
We're back to paddling.
I'm just going to reel this train back in. So Lynn. Lynn Milos won the Masters Women NAC paddler. She was a novice last year.
Yeah.
Really?
She was a novice.
Beat Wade Wilford. That's fun. I'm so sorry, Wade. You're going to love it.
Lynn.
That's what you get.
Put the tequila away.
Give me more granola, bitch.
Oh my God. Also, Wade had a 60-pound training boat.
He did.
He's got it twice.
Now it's an excuse.
Okay. Hey, okay.
And by the way, I'll make up for it right now.
I'm on your team, Wade.
Hey.
Wade, I'm here for you.
I'll make up for it right now. He won Teacher of the Year.
He did win Teacher of the Year! Yes!
Teacher of the Year.
So, you know, I only met Wade through the first V1 race and part of the clinic and all that. I don't know anything about Wade at all.
Oh, he's the best.
Oh, really?
I know. I've only been around him a couple times, and I'm so stoked on this guy.
Yeah. Wait till you eat his granola. You're gonna want to marry the guy.
No, about that.
Yeah. Your agency has to watch out. I'm just kidding.
All right, move on.
Carry but no, Lane was a novice last year. She got so into the sport, right? She was with our NAC team. Her first boat she ever purchased was a V1. She had been just paddling around with some of the breezy boys and borrowing their boats and their V1s. And she just felt, she's like, this is my thing. She's racing Wild Buffalo Relay on a 2-man. And she tells me the other night at practice, she's like, I can't steer a 2-man. Like, and I'm like, Lane, you use your feet. She goes, I don't know what to do. Like,
yeah.
But it's just so interesting to see her.
Who's
come. Amy Dozier.
Oh shit.
Yep. Julie Cornejo and Guppy Barbosa. Good, yeah, good team. Oh, yeah, good. Yeah. Yeah. So she's styling with them. And
yeah, you just put Lane in the seat that has no pedals. Just
I know. Go. That's what I'm saying. Why are you pedaling? Yeah. 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 So, and then Zoe was right behind her. Yeah. Have you guys talked to Darian?
Yeah, I talked to Darian on the beach for
a while. Pacific Northwest guy. Yes.
Yeah. He's super cool guy.
Yeah. He won the Masters Men spot.
Yeah.
Senior Masters, the 50s.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he got the 50 spot for V1 Men. Okay. Yes. So
that's right.
Yeah.
For the entire United States.
Yes.
I keep thinking we're just
California. I'm stoked to meet him, man. You know. And that's I love the Kiwi accent, man.
Yep.
Yeah. He's a wild guy.
He's a big dude.
So I gotta say something actually real fast.
I'm listening.
You know, I've watched.
This is now the Kelly show.
All right. Well, that's fine. It's probably better. But you know, I've watched paddling for a lot of years. You know.
Yeah.
And coached a lot of years, and I'm really good at mechanics and seeing things. You know, I don't have accolades like a bunch of people in the paddling world, but I just have to say,
here it comes.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Danny Ching has the biggest spectrum of talent.
Oh, 100%.
I've ever seen.
100%.
But I mean, you know, I watched him paddle OC1. I've seen him paddle B6 or, you know, 6-man all the time, whatever. But man, that dude, you know, blows me away. This last race is the race where we watched with Heat Team. It was amazing.
Yeah,
right.
Right.
Tito did everything correctly to win that race.
He did. He cut the corner on the last two left hand turns.
Yeah.
We had to call off the other skip because they were like impeding the line.
Yep.
I pulled him out. I'm like, get out of the line, let him cut the line.
And then we got that on the ground, by the way.
Yeah.
Danny has a physical ability that is well trained, but he has a mental ability that most people don't
have. He had a plan. Yeah. On his last legal lap, you knew exactly what he was going to do.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah. You could see it.
But I don't understand this because I'm not that kind of athlete. So maybe you can expand on this role because I'm kind of curious.
I think it's a science. It's a science of the brain, right? Where
how do you 2 miles before you make the last move into or plan the moves into through the channel by Spire Island? You know, let somebody in on the inside. And how do you?
I do think that Danny, even though he's not from Newport, had a little bit of home field advantage.
He had a massive
ahead, you know,
but that doesn't discredit
it. No, not at all.
Because
100%.
He has shown over the years, but also with this last race where he can calculate it. Yeah. So well, like there was the point when they hit maybe about a half mile before the finish when Hititua really made his move. Most people would break.
Right. Yeah. Right.
You know, most people would. If you've been leading an entire race, most people would, as soon as you get passed by the guy that's been behind you for the whole race, most people would fold and break, and he doesn't do that. And that's a thing that's been tried and true in his entire career, if you will, in paddling. He's trained himself to know what he is capable of. And so as soon as Hititua kind of passed him, you go back and you watch that footage.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't panic.
No.
And he
even has a smile on his face.
Yeah, he knew.
Right next to him, you can see the smile on his face. Like he knew.
He knew when he was gonna go. He knew when he was gonna go.
Yeah,
he gave us the awkward non-believe rate.
Right. But the scary thing is, he didn't know Hititua.
Right. He does.
True. That's the crazy
thing. Yeah.
Right. Like if that was me or Brent or anybody else that was here, he would know, you know, we know each other's mannerisms. We know how we race. Right. But he doesn't know this guy and he still had that mannerism of I felt
the two races were so much different for Danny in the aspect of Stevie Boy took him to red right away.
Yeah, exactly. So fast. Steve's gonna punch you in the face right out of the gate.
And maybe if Stevie had a little bit more lungs in him and was trained a little bit better, he probably would have been a different race.
You don't know.
We don't know. But I'm just guessing. But to watch Heaty, who followed Danny the whole time and stayed close to him, Danny was managing his own energy the whole race, still move out enough, and then at the end, in those last, like, I mean, we're talking like 50 meters. Danny just goes, okay, I got
you. We're looking at it right now.
It's wild.
Yeah, if you're half a boat length, you know, we're watching the finish of that race. You're half a boat length back.
Yeah.
With about 25 yards to go.
Head turn. Because I swear he turns at us.
Yeah, he does. He looks.
He probably did. Yeah. He probably did. I mean, that'd be.
He doesn't do it justice. No. He looked and he goes, yeah, watch
this. No, he's.
At the end of the log loop, at the buoy, right there. He just kind of looks over and he goes, here we go.
Yeah, because he doesn't have a down jacket and gloves on.
As Corey Simpson is commenting in the chat saying, let's get Heaty signed up for Patagonia product testing.
I've never been more confident. 2011, Danny partnered up. He luckily asked me to partner up with him for Molokai Relay.
Right.
In 2011. And you know, if you could say I got lucky, I did, with the fact that it wasn't a year that Kai and Pat Dolan were racing. But it was Kai and Aaron Krebs, which is still a fucking rock solid team. And you had Manny and Jimmy Austin,
right?
Still a rock solid team.
Yeah.
And I've never been so confident going into a race than when I was with Danny.
Yeah.
In that year, especially because he, back then and still to this day, he exudes this amount of confidence in his ability that it's hard to explain.
Yeah.
Right. And he exemplified that in that race finish where you watch him and it's like, I expected that from him when he was in his late 20s, early 30s. He's fucking 40.
I know, right? Which, like,
we're going to be 40.
Right.
You guys, that's
very like soon.
Wild.
And this is the,
to me,
this to me is the fastest I've ever seen him.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this.
He only paddled that canoe 7 times.
I know.
Yeah.
Right.
Who's counting? Justin?
But like, broadcast about his count. The numbers. Right.
Oh, you're into the stats.
I think I am. The thing about him,
the numbers guy,
is as much of a freak athlete that guy is, he's got all the skill and athleticism in the world. His ability to adapt.
Yeah.
On the fly, right? And I think that's
the one.
That's equally that's the reason one. Why he is as good as he is.
Yeah.
Even
yeah.
going into
that's a big one. He doesn't let shit bother him.
No, he doesn't.
That guy can adapt, but
he also knows when to draw someone in the deep end of the pool.
Yeah.
Take him down to the bottom.
Yep.
Yeah. Like a fucking orca. Well,
yeah, and his
bottom.
He's got takes him back down again one more time.
He talked about that. So he talks about, hey, you know how you beat Shell, right? Is you make him bleed, man.
Yeah,
you're not gonna beat him speed wise. No one's gonna outrun Shell, but you just make it hurt.
Yeah,
and that's kind of what he did to Stevie and Heaty Tour. He just
well, that's the difference between. That's why it's a different sport. OC1 V1 six man. Yeah. That's why it's different sports.
Yeah,
you know, because this is when he can really show his ability.
Yeah,
you know.
So, I got to ask you a question because. You know, Joe and I have talked, and I talked with Mike about this, about obscure paddlers and people I appreciate and like to watch battle. I
appreciate it. Thank you.
So you're one of my all-time favorites.
Nice.
Okay. And I'm not trying to blow you up here, but I'm just curious to know, from a consistency standpoint and how you've performed through the Molokai channel, you know, through the QB channel, you know, you've done all the things you've done. How do you plan? Do you plan? Do you train that way? Like I'm curious to know, somebody that I'm a fan of you as a paddler.
Yes.
How do you put your life together over the span of time that you've been as good as you've been? Right. I mean, just a few years ago, you were fourth in the world in the long distance champs in Tahiti. Granted, we had a kind of a slowdown with COVID. We're going into Samoa. We're going to see a whole nother generation of people paddling. But tell me about you and what drives you to be the guy that I'm 45 years old. Oh, wait, what am I? How old am I?
44.
I'm 44.
That was his agent offside.
I'm going to be turning 45, but I have these weird, obscure paddlers that I really like to watch. And you're one of them. So
I got.
How do you motivate yourself to be?
I got lucky.
In what way?
I got wired this way.
You did.
I got lucky. You know, I have two parents who have both won Molokai channels,
right?
Nawahine and Molokai Hoi. I was wired this way, where I originally soccer was my outlet, that was my passion.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was 14, freshman year of high school, as soon as I showed interest in paddling, my dad used to shake, you know, 5 a.m. if for the people who don't know, you know, Willie, my dad, yeah. So as soon as I showed interest, or as soon as I said, I had to physically tell him, you know, I want to commit to this. I want to train, because for him, like paddling is training.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just this la-di-da fun thing. It's paddling is training. It's a lifestyle thing that he commits to, you know, every single day, or 5 days a week. And then the weekends was bicycle riding for him. But I got lucky where I was not forced into this, but as soon as I showed interest in it, I was able to commit to it and have somebody to hold me accountable and become really into it.
Okay, so the next question is, how was it that both of you guys, you two,
uh-huh,
Kel and Will, were trusted in that, or let's say your family's trusted NAC enough to put you guys with Sam Couch?
Yeah, we had Sam.
Yeah,
I know. And let you guys be juniors and grow into the sport. Is for Will, coming from you, from a paddling background with champions in your life,
yeah,
how was Sam such a guy? I could see your parents choosing anybody at some point in time, right? I mean, it was local
right,
was something that was thing, but
yeah,
I mean,
Sam, the thing with Sam for me was he's the only guy that's ever made me cry.
Okay.
Same.
Really?
He didn't like sugarcoat anything.
Okay.
He was very tough.
Mm.
He was very tough, but he was loving as well. But he was your coach. He was your guy. He was the one that you would wake up, you know, when you're 15 years old, you would wake up and be excited if you got to ride in his truck to go to
that was the thing.
Santa Barbara, you know, for like,
yeah, that was it. Like, you know, it's like, oh, can I ride with Sam?
Yeah.
We didn't want to ride with fucking Jimmy Spoto.
Yeah.
Right.
That guy had seatbelts.
I don't think.
But we love you, Jimmy. Sorry.
Love you, Jimmy.
Yeah. I still have trouble with that. I think about Sam almost every day. I'll be honest. I don't think I fully have come to terms with his death. Even though I was gone for a lot of years,
mm-hmm,
leading up to it, you know, or not a lot, but a few. But he was a guy that had more impact on me than almost anybody else in the paddling world.
That in your gradual excellence in the sport, did Sam have an impact on you even when you were gone? What did you carry with him to?
I think about
your shaping. Yeah,
I think about him every day. I think about him every day. I think about
game for Kamani or shaping for Kai.
It didn't matter. He makes it. It makes a massive
impact. I'm not a volunteer, but I'm curious to know because I feel like we as a broadcast brothers have a responsibility to ask hard questions. The host of this podcast.
I got one for
Kevin. I think a lot of the people don't realize how hard it is for us to talk about it.
Right.
It is. It was kind of and what's it called? Fucking anticipatory grief.
Yeah.
Right.
Where you knew
it was coming
your whole life.
Yes.
That it was coming, but you weren't expecting it. And I'm still I got to be honest. I don't think I've ever told you this. I'm still not at peace with it.
Yeah.
And I've still never been at peace with it. And I honestly don't even think I was ever as close to Sam as you, Malia, Bruce, ever were.
So does it drive you guys to do? So this is curious to me. Does it drive you guys to do these things like the podcast and promote the sport? Wait, hold on. Is that memory of him, which is so important to you guys and everybody else? I will say this from experience. If Sam Couch didn't tow canoes for Newport Outrigger, Newport Outrigger wouldn't exist today.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And you know what he would have said about this podcast?
He would not.
I know. He wouldn't like this because I mean, let's talk about the reality of the growth of this sport, and let's look at, you know, how do we take it to the next level?
Right? Yeah. I think for me, like, the Sam thing was consistency.
Right.
Yeah.
I had definitely a different parent dynamic than Will did. My parents didn't paddle. Yeah. We grew up in Dover Shores, though. I moved there when I was 7. I didn't go down to NAC. Two blocks away. Till I was probably 14, had no idea I was down there.
Right.
And at that point, I was like, oh, no, this is where I need to be. Mm-hmm. I was done playing volleyball. I still played basketball because I like going hard in the paint. So I'm aggressive. So that was my thing. but it was at the NAC, it was consistent. And yes, I know I lived in Dover Shores and it was a beautiful life. But when things were tough at home, I went to men's practice. Mm-hmm. With Will, with the guys.
Amazing.
Yeah. No, you had your
outlet. You had an outlet.
The outlet. Yeah, he gave that. Hard. But the biggest thing was you had a coach and you had a figure that he had everything stacked against.
Right.
Him.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Everything stacked against him. And so as soon as you started to pull that, you know, I'm a little sore.
Oh, that was bullshit. You would be like, Sam, I'm sick. I don't want to come. I don't care. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not just that pull yourself up by the bootstraps kind of bullshit. No. Like, this is real.
Well, he would never.
And he showed it.
He showed it. Yeah.
He didn't hide that shit.
Right.
There was an Iron Champs where his IV came out and he's bleeding down the front.
I was in the boat.
And we see it happen. And Malia and I run up, and all we have is like our own jerseys. We just give him the jerseys and we tie it off. And Will's looking around, but it's like, that's three. Just like, we know what to do. We know how to handle it.
Amazing.
You don't understand it though when you're that age. Like, you don't understand the and then it gets to a point where, you know, he's gone, but I'm not making this up just for the podcast. Like, I'm saying, I genuinely think about the things he did daily because we were around daily.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Because that's what you do when you're a paddler. Like, you have your group that you paddle with and you train with daily for, you know, a few years at a time, and it kind of shifts and changes. But I think about shit that he did daily and instilled upon us without realizing he was doing it, or maybe he did. I don't know.
Yeah.
And it sticks, man. It sticks.
Like,
and sometimes it hurts.
There's a lot of things where it was like he would never put you in a position where you knew you couldn't handle. The only reason I drive boats, I tow trailers, is because he's like, well, at one point it was like, do you want to come back for, you want to spend the night in Catalina? You want to party, right? So yeah. He goes, well, you better learn how to drive a boat the next morning.
Right.
And you better learn how to escort. Yep. So I'm escorting our, you know, our second men's crew at 18, 19 years old. So like
perfect fucking example, because half the shit, like most of the things that people second guess themselves on, like, yeah, I can't do that.
Yeah.
He would put you in those positions where like you have to do that.
Yeah.
And he had like, to figure it out.
Same.
And he, hey, let's go.
Yeah. I drove my I drove my first trailer, hooked it up myself. I was 19, which I get, maybe it's like not a big deal, but it was like a big deal to me, right? I'm a 19-year-old girl in fucking Newport Beach. And Sam's in the hospital. But we have a fundraiser that night for the men's team going to Molokai or something. We had to go to pick up a bunch of tables and chairs. And so like, Sam's like, I can't pick up the trick. I can't pick up anything. I'm in the hospital. We'll figure, can you call one of the guys to figure it out? Couldn't get a hold of Bruce. Couldn't get a hold of Riley. Will was somewhere. I couldn't get a hold of anybody. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to go do it. And he goes, what do you mean? I was like, well, I've seen you do this 100 times.
Yeah.
All I have to do is back up the trailer, right? And then I just got to hook it up and then I just got to drive it, right? You got to go wide. I've seen you do this. I can do it. And I did it. And like, I came back, I unloaded the trailer and I was like, all right, I can do that. Like, you taught me that just by allowing me to follow you along. I'm now independent. I can do things like that. And that was just the small thing. Now I'm driving 6-man trailers. I'm driving 1-man trailers, right? But it's because of the situations that he's put us in, knowing that we could handle it, you know. And we both coached the junior team for so long, you know, and it's the same thing. Like,
no, you and Malik.
Well, I told Miles, or I've coached him since he was 11.
Yeah.
The number of times I've talked to him before a race.
Bag on the water.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, just float around. Float around. Right. But it's like same thing. He was 11, I think, when Sam passed, or 12.
Yeah.
You know, and he was. Yeah. Him? Yeah.
The kid asking, "Do you need help with your?"
Oh, we've raced him right. But it was the
fuck. Turn this around.
But it's
so,
the same.
There's the deal.
Yeah.
There's the deal. Well, so
well,
sorry.
No.
Well, I'm glad you asked that question to Will, because I had a question for Kelly, but she answered my question.
Yeah.
I was gonna ask, like, hey, you know, as paddlers, you know, Justin paddles. I mean, you paddle too, Kelly, but you know, we all understand our why.
Yeah.
And you know, having Linda Dresbach at the last race, the Fall California.
Right.
Having her there, you know, really, you know, made me appreciate, you know, like the things that she used to do for me up in Northern California.
Yes.
Right.
What
like,
is that?
Like, hey,
because she's up north.
She was like the Kelly of
kidding.
I've
never known.
Yeah, and she's the one that kind of keeps the ducks in a row, right?
No,
and
well, I know that just by what she does, but sure. I didn't know you had any connection.
Yeah, and so that got me thinking about Kelly. You know, I was like, you know, before the race started on Saturday, you know, we're trying to do the audio, the microphones, and setting up the gimbals and all our equipment.
What?
And you know, we got Kelly's kids running through the office. And
yeah, sorry about that.
It was so much fun.
There's so many moving parts, right?
Yeah.
And we're like, man, Kelly is out here just organizing, and she's always doing this. And I just wanted to know your why.
Why?
But I agree.
Hearing you talk,
I kind of love it too a little bit.
Yeah, but hearing her talk about consistency, that coach, that, you know, it sounds like he led by example.
I feel like there's levels of commitment to the sport, though.
Yeah.
It doesn't, you don't have, like, even for me, I feel like my talents or whatever I have is outside of being some sort of champion or some sort of competitor in the sport.
Yeah.
Like, I got something outside of it. You know, there's just so much spectrum involved in growing the sport, right?
Yeah.
You have to have coordinators. You have to have people that can talk the language and understand how to organize.
Yeah.
You got to have people that can execute. And then you got to have all the paddlers that you have to feed their shitty egos to win races. I mean, that's a real deal, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And So, I mean, I'm not going to ask you, you answered it perfectly for me, you know, just hearing you
keep on. I agree. There's so much passion in your voice, Kelly.
Exactly.
The passion is, and for you and Will to answer those questions that were kind of a really shitty question to answer, which it's But it's a good thing because it brings so much value to what you guys are doing.
Yeah, but it's also when you think about it, like, I mean, the sport is still growing.
Yeah.
But this happens in small, I don't even know how to phrase it. Like, it's
not that small, though, Will.
It's not anymore.
Really fast.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that people actually understand, right? Like, I mean, I just always appreciate what Kelly does. You know,
100%.
It takes a village, man.
But it's weird. It does come down sometimes to just that one person.
Yeah.
That was involved.
To make a decision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we watch, like, still on the daily, like, talk about Billy for a second.
For sure. Okay. Yeah.
Like,
Well, we don't even need to talk about him. Like, as a person, just you see these people that just dedicate daily time to hustling.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hustling
every day.
Yeah. Every day. Hustling. And that makes you realize that you just can't sleep, man.
When Billy Whitford on a Sunday, filling up skiffs with gasoline.
And I'm staring out into the sky,
Stop. You know, like, what are you doing?
Well, then he's a big part of our why also. Like, he's also brought us up in the, what is it, like, the, we always, it's either, I don't know how to say it without sounding like cocky or anything, but he's basically brought us up in this way of, like, if you want it done,
do it.
Like, do it. You know you can do it right. I know I can do it right.
Yeah.
Don't wait for somebody.
So I'm not going to wait for someone to do it for me. And
I want to say this on record right now.
Oh, here.
There is nobody fit to run NAC after Billy besides Kel.
Oh, gosh.
Anybody. Nobody.
Yeah.
You disagree?
No.
There's nobody fit to do that.
Yeah.
And maybe it's Kelly and Malia together. That's fine. But the soul of the establishment has to be maintained because there are so many people there trying to take advantage of that establishment.
Yeah.
Trying to take advantage of the establishment and have a lot of money.
You know how you know how my dad got his citizenship?
How?
He had his
You might know this
better. No, he had his He had his green card, right? And he's getting ready to
from Scotland,
his visa. He had a work visa. He needed to have a job for that work visa. And that job was the executive director of the Newport Aquatic Center.
They made him the executive director before the NEC was built.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So that his work visa was valid, continue to the green card.
And then he got to marry my mom.
Yep.
And they're still together, Sprite.
Hey, not surprising. Yeah.
38 years. Congrats.
What else is, like, questionable?
Yeah.
We'll figure that out later. His daughter, Finn, is a
very girl. Yes.
No, but I actually owe, I mean, this is turning into our life story, but we'd have to bring in my mom and dad and Billy. But as far as I'm concerned, or as far as I've been told, is the basically keeping my dad in the country was obviously a huge step to me being born. And then my Kapena Whitford.
Yeah.
Ironically, same name, apparently no relation.
Yeah.
Over in Maui was one of the big reasons that supposedly my mom and dad got together, and then here I am all these years later. We're doing this podcast, and so you talk about the why. That's it, really, for me. I got this. I have a love for the sport that is, in my mind, unparalleled to a lot of people. I'm deeper in this than most people ever realize.
Yep.
And I'm owning that. I'm starting to own that. I'm realizing that. And that's where I'm at now.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know,
I'm going to ask another question. So as a somebody that I hold in high regard as an elite paddler in the world, you have Justice and you have
Judson.
Thank you.
They have similar names.
How are you translating your... Okay, so what we find in paddling world is that if you're really good in paddling,
yeah,
you want to give a little bit, but you don't want to give everything.
Yeah.
Because you don't want, if someone's tapping their rudder on an OC1, you don't want to tell them not to tap it. So it's just slowing them down or whatever. Mm. Like little secrets that you do. How are you translating your success and your consistent success? It doesn't matter if you're first or not, Will.
Okay.
What it matters is you've always been relevant in this paddling world for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you translate that to the next generation? What are you prepared to do?
It comes from three guys.
I was going to say, there's a third guy.
Who's the third guy?
We've got a big part of our life also in the youth and getting us where we're at and just teaching us everything was Josh.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, having such a huge impact.
Right. Well,
but that's going to be so. It's
so you need four, then yeah.
Okay, so go five. Just go.
Well, you got. Wow.
There's so many people, right? There's so many people. Everyone had their niche. But
we talked about Sam.
Yeah.
Right.
So he's
Billy.
He taught me a lot about the. He taught me a lot about the fundamentals of paddling, but he also taught me about consistency.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Then you have Danny, who mm-hmm. taught me about, you got to go as
well.
He taught us
to trust ourselves.
Trust yourself.
You know, he taught us.
He taught me a lot about the mental game.
Yeah.
Yep.
Then I transitioned, I was over in Maui and I learned from Kai.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he taught me about surfing and also the mental game.
Awesome
and,
man too. Yep.
Yeah. And then you've got people like my dad, and Billy, and my mom.
Anchors.
So I always say anchors. Will has the best pedigree.
And then when I was on Oahu, I got lucky. I got to train with Kalad Judd when he was older, but that got me involved with Jimmy Austin and Mark Rigg. Mm-hmm. And like I used to be at the Outrigger Bar after doing Hawaii Kai runs, and people would come up, old Outrigger members, thinking that it was my dad.
Right.
They heard Will Reichenstein was at the bar and they thought it was my dad. Right. And so
reach out to him on Facebook now that he's at
your school. He's overtaken my Facebook. So there's been a lot of people that have I think about these people every day and the lessons that they've taught me because I'm
they're the souls behind your success.
Yeah, I'm anal retentive, right? Like I want to win races.
Yep.
I want to train for them. Yep. And I think about it every day.
Yep.
And those are the people that first come to mind about all the different things that they've taught me, right?
Right.
Over the years.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's more to them. There's more names that could be said. And of course.
Oh, totally.
Of wisdom that helps you get somewhere or whatever.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
So let's ask Kelly about this.
They really turned this around. That's
part about your guys' relationship together is that you guys have a
we went to winter formal together.
Well, a dynamic, kind of dynamic split.
Yeah.
Right.
Harbor.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The guy that goes out and just hammers miles, and the woman that organizes and controls and dictates and moves people and does those things. So tell me about how you have put yourself in the position that you are. Like I said before, you should be running NAC. You'll probably be running after Billy's gone at some level or another, or retires, whatever. But how did that become how was that put on your plate?
Right. So what's a little different than Will and I's upbringing, I did not come from a paddling background.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I found paddling, I was, okay, so I'm like 5'7", right? I'm the oldest of five girls. They all played volleyball. I don't think we've reminded you guys in a while, but it's about time to bring it back. The reminder to spice up your life and order directly from Culture Hot Sauce for all of your hot sauce needs. You can use the code Cocktails and Canoes for a discount at checkout. I know, right? So Will grew up with my family, right? Like Will grew up with my family. He was the boy, the five girls. Malia was in there too.
I was John's boy.
Yeah. Malia, by the way, Malia and Will, both only children. So they latched on to the Thompson family real quick. Yeah. But right. My parents didn't really know anything about paddling, and no fault to them. I barely knew anything about paddling. I was like, Mom,
most people don't.
Right. I'm like, Mom, I'm gonna go paddle. She goes, okay. Thinking I'm kayaking.
Have fun rowing.
Right. I remember coming home like, Mom, I'm paddling to Catalina tomorrow. It's a big race. She goes, okay.
Sounds good.
Do you need some money? Like, yeah. She's like, do you need a flyer ticket? No, Mom, I'm paddling there, but I'm going to come home. Okay. Eventually. So it's just like little stuff like that. So I was really on my own to find my own way. I'd go do Molokai. I'd come home and be like, Mom, I just crossed the channel. Like, oh, okay, cool. No idea. And it's not because they weren't supportive. They were super supportive. It's just, they just had no idea what I was doing.
Right.
And I guess I was just that 17, 18, 19 year old that was working in AC and I could, you know, pay my own way to do these things. And so I was just go do them. And so then I just kind of turned into that role of like, well, this is my life now, right? This is the life I chose. I'm living in Santa Ana with Maddie and Jimmy. I started dating Bruce and he moved in right away.
Wait, Bruce. His name is
Joshua.
Did he tell you? You're fine.
We can adjust it. Did he tell you the story of how he got it?
No.
So it's kids paddle camp at NAC. Bruce has been going to kids paddle camp. So Bruce is 3 years younger than Will and I. We're 32.
I think
we're gonna be 33 this year. My husband of 6 years, my baby daddy of two children will be turning 30 in August.
Oh boy.
Okay. So
August
16th.
Okay.
So he was going to kids paddle camps and 7 years old. As soon as his mom could drop him off, he's going to paddle camp. And so Billy is doing the roll call, giving everyone these nicknames, but it's like, your name's Phil, we're calling you Philly, like something like connected to their name. Your name's William, we're calling you Billy. Right. Yeah. And so like Bruce didn't get a nickname because he's like, hey, this kid's name's Josh. Like, I'm just going to call him Josh. Right. So Bruce at probably 8, 7 or 8, he may have been doing paddle camp a year. So he like felt comfortable approaching Billy and asking like, Billy, like, what's my nickname? And Billy goes, you look like a Bruce. Probably because my husband had facial hair at 9 years old, yeah,
typical Billy.
But so that stuck. So that is how Bruce got his nickname.
Brucey boy. Yeah. Well, we're changing it to Bryce.
Bryce. And then I accidentally texted him saying Bryce. But
just throw this out. You know we named our dog Bruce.
Yes, yes.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, that's why we're changing Bruce's name
to Bryce. It's Bryce because of the dog. My gosh. But I guess like since I was just a small tangent to you as we're talking about Bruce's name, but like that's just how where I got is like I do all these things on my own. We're going to Molokai. Will was my change coach. It's Molokai 2012, like the year we barely made it out of the harbor entrance. And I remember Will looking at me like,
yeah,
do your parents know where you are? I go, I don't think so. I don't think so. I told them I was going to Hawaii though. So like they know I'm in the area.
Never heard of Holly a lot.
Yeah. And it's like no fault that like we're such a volleyball family. Like it's all gym sports, right? Like that they're like, oh, our daughter paddles. That's cool. Everyone be like, oh, that's so cool. What's paddling? They're like, oh, like in the ocean, you know? And it's probably not my fault that I didn't explain it because I was like so engulfed in my own world, doing my own thing. My sisters had their achievements, and I was like, you know, happy with what I was doing. And I think being able to be that independent on my own at like maybe an early age, and it's not like I'm trying to like toot my own horn or anything, but I kind of was very independent and grew up on my own very fast.
Yeah, a bit.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, Will knows where I came from. Like, you know, very.
Do you remember the time?
Oh my God.
When we were, this is a fun one. When we were, you were still going to school up at Cuesta.
Oh, yeah. I followed Will to San Luis Obispo.
No, yeah. And
San Luis Obispo?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And we have different styles of packing.
Oh.
And
oh, we do.
There was this moment where we were loading up the cars, or about to load up the cars to go up to San Luis Obispo. And Kelly put everything like in a bunch of just like
bags. Don't make it weird.
Like trash bags.
Like grocery bags.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
But there was no rhyme or reason to the bags. Like it was just everything was mixed. Yeah. And she's loading up the Ford Explorer. And I was just like, oh my gosh. I can't deal with this shit. I can't.
This is my whole life.
Much. It's clutter. It's cluster. It's just.
I do happen to have sometimes like a lot of clutter.
This is working.
Well, walking to my house.
Yeah.
It's clutter everywhere.
And even through that, we still made it to this point.
So did you paddle up there, Will? Or
oh, of course.
Oh, yeah. We did. We did.
Yeah. Both of you guys did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, club was up there at the time.
Matter.
we paddled with Polly Kai. They took us in Mike and Denise Shandroff,
yeah, that's right.
took us in as the college kids, and so with Malia and Gavin as well.
We gotta find out if they're alive.
They are. They've made it through the snow. They've made it through the snow. They're coming down in a couple weeks. They're gonna thaw out.
It's on Facebook about from Mike Shandroff that they're
okay.
Yeah.
Oh shit. I mean,
yeah.
Like
right.
They're looking like a bad spot though, man.
Yeah. I should call them before they're there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
oh good, Joe's back.
Joe's back. Yeah, right.
Musical chair.
Right. But I got to this spot where I am doing all like the races and stuff, right after Sam died because he did it.
Yeah.
And then I was just like, oh, well, I guess someone has to do it now. And so I just took over the junior team with Malia and Jimmy right away. Will was coming back and he's like, I'll be back in a year and I'll help out where I can. And it was very much like a community that came together. I mean, he passed away the day after Catalina in 2014.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I remember.
Yep. And he, I remember being in the shop and I knew I was coming. I just told the junior team, like, I just looked Miles in the eye and said, like, he'll be back next week. It's just a tune up in the hospital. He'll be fine. Right. When I knew he was in the ICU, I didn't even know what the ICU was at that time. I remember I had to call Spencer and be like, what's ICU mean? And he goes, where are you? And I was just like, I'm at NAC. And he goes, okay, I'll be there in a minute. I'll explain it to you. So he came down. And then the next day, we hadn't heard from him. However, Billy had made us call to say goodbye. So we knew it was coming. And so we did that. And then he passed, but we hadn't heard anything. And I'm standing in the shop at NAC and Micah comes in and he goes, Kelly, I'm so sorry. And I go, what are you sorry for? And you didn't do anything. And he goes, no, I just heard about Sam. I'm like, who'd you hear this from? I haven't heard anything. And he goes, well, Johnny told me.
Uh-huh.
And so I called Johnny and he doesn't even say hi. He just asks where I am.
Right.
He's like, where are you? And I'm like, I'm in the NAC shop because I need you to stay there. Don't answer your phone. Don't talk to anybody. I'll be there in 10. And he came down, he explained the whole situation to me, like what happened and everything. And then after that, I was just like, I didn't cry. Like I'm crying now, right?
Yeah.
I didn't cry because I was like, okay, well, someone has to tell people because no one should be able to have to find out the way I found out. Right. And so we had women's practice that night because we're going to Pailolo in 4 days.
That's right. You guys are just getting ready to
cry. Yes. Yeah. So I was like, okay, I just found out Sam passed. Well, now I need to call some people. So Mike had said, Maddie's out front. She's looking for you. I'm like, okay, well, the first person I have to tell, I gotta go tell Maddie. Cause I already told Malia. So I go and I tell Maddie, Sam passed. And then I was like, who else am I going to call right now? I call Josh because I know if I call Josh, he will take over a lot of the calling for me.
Right.
You know? So I call Josh and I let him know. He goes, don't worry about it. Whatever you need. I'm here. I'm coming for you. Like, just, you know, it's fine. I'm like, okay, well, I told him I'm going to call Danny and let Danny know myself. I told Danny after that, I still hadn't like shown any emotion. I just went straight into, okay, well, we have Pailolo in 5 days.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, girls, we know this just happened. We need to get on the water because Sam would not have wanted us like, you know, do this. And then I looked at Jimmy And I go, fuck, bro. No one is called Bruce.
Right.
Bruce is driving the ferry till midnight. Mm-hmm. And Bruce and Sam had a very different relationship than Sam and I had, where Sam and I were like best friends. And we still, I mean, we like, you know, we're just like brother, sister, maybe like best friends. I live in his house now. Like I rent his house from his parents now. You know, that's the type of relationship we had with his family. But for Bruce, it was definitely like that older brother figure, you know, like so much. And so I was like, well, after practice, you know, we need to go tell Bruce. So we do our practice, we come back and I'm like, okay, we have to go to the ferry. So it's me, Jimmy, Maddie, Malia, Spencer. I mean, there's like five or six of us and we're walking down to the ferry and Bruce just knows. He's like,
yeah. Look on your face.
Yeah. And I was like, I can't even tell him.
Yeah.
You know? So he knew by the time we were all walking, he's like, you guys never visit me anytime. Why are you guys coming down now?
Right.
Jimmy did a couple rides back and forth with him, talked to him. And it's like, okay, I still hadn't gotten into like wrap my head around it. I was still like, okay, well now I guess we need to plan his memorial. And I went straight into planning that. Like I still was just like,
this is the ironic shit. That's the shit that he trained you for.
Right. Right? I was just like, cool, we're doing it. And like, that's what I think set me off for like, I'm now taking over. Like this was like, oh, here I come. This is my time. You know, like in a way where I was kind of supposed to. And then, yeah, like I just, it's just kind of how it worked. I was like, well, so we planned this burial. I flew out the day, I wasn't even at his memorial service at NAC. I planned it, was not there, flew out, did Pailolo. In hindsight, I wish I was there. I was like, what am I going to do? Do a paddling race I can do every year? I just,
you wish you like, were there. He didn't give a shit.
No, he didn't. He, you know, his mom even said like, you know. And he wouldn't want to be here.
He'd rather you be
But then I was like, okay, so, you know, Billy needs support. Sam was Billy's support. I was like, well, so that's going to be me now. I will be the support, you know, and Will's going to be my support and Malia's going to be our support. And like, we're all just going to support each other. Mm-hmm. And then it just turned into, well, we're putting on a race in 3 months called the Off the Couch Race after Sam. Right. So that was the first like race I put on by myself because we'd put on Hal Roast Off with Sam. Will's parents had always helped us with Hal Roast, and they still do. But it was like after Off the Couch, it was like, now we're just rolling.
Yeah, that was your first.
Okay, so now I'm loading the one man trailer for the first time by myself. Still really like, I mean, I probably hadn't really accepted everything. I just like did all these things to keep me busy. And now that's what I do, you know? And that's like, I think, I don't know.
But that's the thing, like,
I still paddle and I still train and I'm still, you know, doing the races I want to do. You know, I obviously can't race the NAC races anymore because I'm putting on the races, but like for the NAC, for like my community there that we've built, that's what I want to do.
But that's,
it's
a different type of situation, right? Where there's some people who they paddle and all they do is paddle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
That's great.
Shit around anybody else.
Yeah.
But it's not for.
That's okay. Yeah. You hold that card for those guys.
And, but then there's the level up, right? Like there's the levels up that you go where you realize the amount of work that goes into putting on a race and doing all that stuff. And that was what we got exposed to at a very early age.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily or not, we took those lessons and put them into our lives, like when we had weddings and shit.
Oh yeah,
you know. Well, part of it is you don't have a lot of money to spend.
No, we're some broke ass bitches with a podcast.
But you realize all your paddling friends—they're
also broke as shit.
And they'll show up and they'll start. I love it. You know what? I have enough of this therapy.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
They have more questions.
Let's be real about this, right?
Yeah. I think we need to bring back food service.
Let's do this. Oh. So we talked about this yesterday.
You guys are going to have a podcast. Great. That's exactly what we want.
Well, maybe not. But the point is that it was important for us to kind of drag you guys into the deep end of the pool.
Yeah.
to understand the motivation and content and where you guys are at.
So
here's what the deal is. Hearing what we hear today, right? It's important for us to like really kind of like sit down and understand what's real and what's not real, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kel and Will are doing a podcast in a world that is theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the ability to interview people and talk to people, whatever else. But what we found out tonight was they care. Their intentions are not based on anything that's other than what we want to perpetuate as a sport.
Yeah.
Right? Do you agree?
We have no sponsors. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You find out the why and you buy in.
Yep.
It's the joy. It goes back to the joy of paddling.
Yep.
We don't get paid.
There's so many people involved. It's such a fun thing to talk about, right? When you get to know like all the depths of all the things.
Mm-hmm.
And they came to us today to get our depths.
Yeah.
Kind of dug them out a little bit.
We felt that.
There.
But like this podcast started with me calling Will and saying like, hey, I have this idea.
Yeah.
And like the number of times I've called Will and be like, yo, I have this idea.
Every day.
I have this idea. And the number of times I
call Will. I don't want to buy Bitcoin. Jesus Christ.
And the number of times I've called Will like, okay, Will, so I did a thing. And then he's like, ah, shit, what do I have to clean up? Like, you know, or like. What? Okay. Why did you say that? Okay. We can help this, you know, but it's like, it's true. Like I would so many things I wouldn't be without him,
right?
You know,
vice versa.
Like,
I think their appreciation between the both of you guys is something that like, even Joel and I, when we do the broadcast and we're doing that stuff, it's something that we try and emulate in the sport because you guys have fun conversation with people. Here's the best part. Kelly works for Johnny, and you are Kai's representative in the world in certain things.
Authenticity.
There's so much fun in that.
Yeah.
Like I hear Will talk about, you should have paddled a canoe or whatever. Like,
I'll talk shit all day. Come on.
And Kelly will poke like, blah, 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 whatever. I think it's so much fun to
watch. That's the whole point.
And entertain and listen to. And it's not malicious. And that is what's important in this sport, is not being malicious, right?
But you gotta be able to laugh at yourself.
You got to.
Totally.
Come on.
And people our audience, they're going to self-select, right? There's the competitive paddlers, and then there's the recreational paddlers.
Yeah. That's me. I just want to have fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, we know.
And what's great is we can offer we can offer a wide range of perspective, right? And
I feel that in the whole aspect of the sport, we have a good understanding of people and where they're at, what they want to do, and we can capitalize on the message.
Yep.
What they want to do, where they want to go, right?
And so again, to bring it back full circle, we spoke about the people that supported us along the way. You know, we touched on this race that was a milestone of a race last weekend.
Yeah,
with the idea of trials.
So crazy.
Yep.
Like, I think we should bring it back to the support system that's going to happen in Samoa. Right. You got, you know, Micah coaching, you know, there's some buzz around this.
Totally.
This coming race.
Totally.
In Samoa, you know, I think the U.S. team is going to represent this year.
Right. Good. Well, we're taking it seriously. You know, we're finally doing it as, you know, we're selectively putting our strongest people out, not just the people that can afford the trip.
But think about, this, Kel, the last trip you guys made.
Oh yeah, that was
Gold place, fourth place.
Yeah,
Ryland place,
second
place.
Australia,
huh? No, Ryland place, second place in
Tahiti.
In Tahiti, the last distance champ.
No, the last distance champ.
Oh, was Australia? It was Australia. Joe was there. Joe was there. The last
Seventh place finish.
Oh,
but yeah. So we went to Tahiti in 2017.
Before that, it was Justin yelling at
Joey guys.
So I was so mad.
Yeah. Well, the whole race.
You still have the stickers.
It's not my fault.
It's your fault. It's on your truck.
I'm trying to protect the champions here, okay? Look at the film. I'm protecting the champions.
Yes.
You have the inside line, cut your skiff out, and come out on the outside. Justin,
you already in the driver's seat.
Yeah.
It's very clear. You already in the driver's seat, okay?
It's a shitty deal. It's all my fault. Hey.
Hey.
Look at this one. Look at it.
We're back. Hey. We are watching the YouTube channel. Newport Aquatic Center has a whole playlist. NAC Baja California series, race number 2.
You know how they do the ridiculous. You know how they do the fight companions? Joe Rogan guys, we do the fight companions. Now they're remotely close, but we could do the fucking paddling companions.
Let's do it.
Where we rewatch races that happen. I know, but nobody's known that.
I know, yeah.
Because we've been talking about death and shit.
There's so much content.
This is perfect. This couldn't be any better.
We're coming back to the climax.
We got Heat Detour.
Detour's a half a boat ahead.
He's coming up on the big.
This is the big left turn.
Jacket and gloves.
This is the big left turn.
You gotta wonder what's on Danny's mind.
Right, Heat Detour had cut inside.
Danny's doing the slingshot.
Previous to under the PCH bridge, Danny took him into the deep water and let him hurt.
You guys are just saying the same shit you said on the boat. Come on. Let's hear the drug shit. Let's hear the shit. Come on. Who's panicking? Is anyone panicking?
You're panicking. Heat Detour is pushing right now and he's trying really, really hard.
But you know what was interesting to me was I was looking at body language, right? Danny's more upright. Heat Detour is leaning into
air going.
Oh, yeah. And I feel like
Heat Detour is down, he's head down. And Danny's chest up. He forced his hand.
You don't think so?
No, Danny planning out. Yes, but the right way.
He forced his hand.
He just said, hey,
you know,
look how comfortable he is. Look at the film, how comfortable he is.
So he's upright, right? Danny's upright. He smiles at us.
He leans in. And then he goes into the sprint. And we had just had a
message. Looks way too comfortable.
He's so comfortable.
At this point, we're coming into the final sprint here.
Watch this. We get to the long run. And he goes.
I would have gone way earlier, and that's why I would have lost. We're coming into it. 20 yards, and here we go.
Boom.
Watch the angle. Watch the angle.
Look at the truck.
Holy shit.
Dennis Foley.
He's double that rate.
He also has a shorter boat, yeah. So he's got a. Doesn't he look?
No. I've drawn him out. He's got a 6-inch longer boat. I swear to God, I'm not making that up.
He's going to have more volume.
Okay.
It wouldn't matter either way.
No one.
It wouldn't matter.
Yeah.
Danny owned the race the whole race.
Yeah.
And Danny had it all planned out from before he made the second lap, Lido. He had it all planned out, and he made it happen.
And let's hope Heat Detour never comes back for a race inside the harbor, because it was great.
Yeah.
He didn't know where he was going.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. This is a point series, right?
It is, yeah.
So coming into the point series, at the end of that race, Danny, who had won the distance in the first race, who won the sprint.
Right.
Which was weighted differently. He got 8 points for that and just won that one. So he got a total of 58 points.
Jesus Christ, he's crushing us.
Will is at 35, but if Will gets
25
points,
Google spreadsheet,
which is available to everybody.
So I have to win.
You got
to
win.
Will has to win to get, and if he wins, he gets 60 points. And that would beat Danny's 58 right now because he won't be at the next race.
So
however, if
have to win,
if Brent wins,
oh no,
he will be at 56 points.
Yes,
point shot.
But if like and then and then say yeah. if Will gets second,
oh no,
to Brent, that would give him 18 points. He would be behind Brent by 3 points.
You don't want that.
So
yeah, you don't want that.
No.
However, is Stevie coming back? Is anyone coming back?
Yeah.
He's coming back.
Okay, so if Stevie.
Yeah, he wins.
But if Stevie wins, he gets 25 points, and Will gets second and gets gets 18 points. Will beat Stevie in the point series by 4 points.
Hey, geography, bitch.
I know. That's right. It's all about my life.
Maps. I got you, motherfucker. I live in this town.
You know, the best ability is availability.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Show up more, man. Come on.
Man. Just gotta show up.
Here's the thing I predict. And I said this on camera at the end of the race. I was saying that
geography matters.
No.
Oh.
No. I was saying that Danny he's not gonna paddle the last, race.
Yeah.
But what I was saying is that champions are gonna come test Danny in the waters in California.
Oh, send your next champ.
Yep.
Send your next champ.
And he's not gonna be at the next race though.
Yeah.
Regardless,
the best thing about Danny winning two races in a row is that he's going to look at that and go,
"We're not going to run train.
With this shit. We're going to send people out. Yeah. They're going to leverage.
There's somebody leverage
sponsors.
Yep,
and everybody to bring them out here.
Yep.
We're going to have champions out here, either in the third race or next year.
Yep.
We'll go through the series again.
Yep.
We're going to have champions.
Yep.
You're going to have Votu out here on his teamie.
Yep.
You're going to have maybe even Ken CJ. Maybe even Tupu shows up.
Oh.
And Tupu, I'm going to tell you right now, I don't know where you're at, but you better fucking show up to a race.
Well, and think about it from the other end, right?
Right.
Like, think about the inspiration and the hope that Danny brings.
Right,
like
think
of all the solos, right? That the Tahitians came and mopped the floor,
right?
They go to Hawaii and they mop the floor.
Wow.
The last two Tahitian champions came to California,
That's right.
That's a statement, man,
right? And granted, early in the season, they're not in shape, so they say.
You can make that case. It's different.
It's fun.
It's a world solo championships versus some California series that no one really heard of, not yet, anyway.
Right.
But it's still a pretty neat story.
Awesome.
Yep. Yeah. And then like moving into the women, because there have been Tahitian women that have come over. You know, I don't know if Vaimiti is coming over again. Okay.
What?
Yeah, man.
She's like, I don't want to live here.
Yeah. Right. Well, we gotta
set her up with some jackets, though.
She looked real cold.
She looked really cold. Corey, call us.
Joe's
sports basement. On the sports basement, right? I think the winner will do the series winner.
Let's do it.
So, Will,
yes.
Do you want a gift card?
What are you doing?
This gift card. You gotta win it out.
This podcast episode is actually sponsored by Sports Basement. It is.
That's his thing?
That is, Joe works at our thing now. It's our thing now.
Oh, shit.
Sports Basement. Booze and boats over there on the other side of the table. But you guys, Zoe, if Vaimiti doesn't come back and Zoe gets first place in open women, she would then be beating Vaimiti in the points.
Yeah, he's coming back.
Okay.
Fantasy football.
Yeah. What we need to do is have April come back.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen.
I know. It's the same. Carolina Cup. That's why Danny's not here.
So how do you guys feel about the race overall in three stages? Like, what is the next progression of the race and next year? What are you guys looking forward to?
So I am super stoked on the series as a whole. Right. Being able to, because like we made this series because we got our asses handed to us international racing half the time, right? Mm-hmm. Not every time, half the time. Yeah. We're in the V1s. And it's because a lot of times you're going to go race Hano Hano. I'm going to use Brent as an example because Will is consistently on a V1. Brent is not.
Right.
So Brent isn't going to go out and race a V1 all the time if Danny's on an OC1.
Fun about
so it's like
right now, by the way.
Yeah, and so it's like if you put everyone on the same somewhat playing field, you're really gonna see everyone's true talents come out and their strengths there.
Yeah.
And so having a V1 only race, which by the way, Billy has quoted saying this is the stupidest thing
I know
that we've ever done.
It's one of my favorite quotes.
Who are people thanking on the beach for being in front of the innovative racing of Southern California?
Billy Whitford.
I know.
So, which is true. This would be nothing without him. If I didn't come to Billy and say, I have this idea, it would have been. But
a quick little insert about Manava.
Yes.
Let's talk about that a little bit. We are, because I support it 100%. We are trying to take away from, we're trying to put some unlimited canoes in the world and try and paddle it.
Yes.
And Hawaii.
Yes.
Which the original foundation of the group has had a problem with.
Yes.
So how is that going?
So we just did 3 practice runs.
Yeah.
With Manava. So Manava Racing is a race series. It's new this year. And it's all unlimited racing.
I love it.
Which in Hawaii is a little bit frowned upon. I do think because they just like to keep their tradition and they like to keep their legacy. Your legacy is brought on by what you instill in your paddlers and how you continue that legacy with them, regardless of what they're paddling. So they can still keep that traditional power, those good vibes and everything, and still paddle a boat that maybe is 200 pounds lighter and goes a little bit faster.
Yep.
You know, it's just going to take you more places and it's going to take you there faster.
Can I share something
with Yes.
you? So Uncle Kimmy Kale,
yes,
who is a big advocate of all kinds of stuff, he told me, he said to me on the beach at ADR, first time you paddled the Matagina, right? Which was just unlimited.
Yes, dude. Yeah.
Been in a pool can or nothing.
Yeah, Matagina's unlimited.
Goes, if Hikamamea was alive today, he would have married his cousin to get this canoe in order to acquire the state of Hawaii, which he did, unify the islands, right?
Yeah.
So that was his whole thing. He said, This is important to us because it's important to us to move faster. And that's what King Kamehameha would have wanted from all of us.
Yep.
So it's an interesting conversation to dial into.
Yep.
And having the Manava'a stuff there in Sand Island and all things.
Yep.
It's something that should be supported by, I'm Samoans and Canadian, so my opinion doesn't matter. But it's something that should be supported by Hawaiians.
Yep.
Because it is exactly what the Hawaiian Islands were built off of.
Innovation.
Innovation.
Yep.
And speed.
Yep. And I see both sides, right? Because I'm kind of...
feel that way?
Because
I feel that way, but to me, it's the intention.
Right? Yeah.
Like, okay, you're gonna make... Yeah, I mean, what is the big goal, right? You want to make canoe races with unlimited canoes. That's cool and everything, right? But is this included for everyone? What's the message?
Right.
What's the intention?
So it is. Totally.
I get we're trying to innovate, right?
Yeah. Well, it's just like how we have V1 racing. It's just a different style of racing. It's like, we're not clouding up or we're not you know, messing up any traditional races. There still is that. I still strongly believe everybody should know how to rig their boat, right? Not just the snap-ins.
Right.
You know, that's something that we were taught, you know, and there is tradition. Yeah. You keep tradition, you keep tradition and you teach legacy and what you need to leave behind and move forward. Right. Yeah. So, but having unlimited only racing, you know, one, it does in the basics of it, it makes it easier for juniors to take your boat down the water and paddle.
That's right.
It makes it easier for the aunties to take your boat paddle That's down right. and paddle. That's right. Right?
Aunties,
you know,
there's a need for that.
Yeah.
To facilitate equipment and get it down there by themselves.
Yep.
There's a need for that.
And Montava is just a different race series.
Right.
It's just another type of racing. You don't have to do it. You don't have to do the traditional races. You do what you want to do. There's all these options.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, complements it.
Right? Yeah. You know,
together. Like,
Complements, you know, the traditions and,
Right. Right. And, you know, the people that are partaking in these Montauban practice runs that just happened before we get into the 2-day races that are going to happen in June and July, you know, they're still doing, you know, they'll still go do their traditional races and race in their traditional boats.
Yeah.
And it's not like they're looking down on those traditional boats. They're just looking at a different type of race. It's a
different race.
You know?
And you look at
the class out differently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You look at like the competitive teams in Hawaii, right? Like a lot of like the grade scale, right? Like they're grading them on, okay, you got a time trial on this freaking 2022 built Draco that's 17 pounds,
right?
You know, like the innovative one-man canoe. So it's graded on these kind of canoes, and then now we gotta go race in the Bradley Lightning.
Yeah. You know? Well, and it's a different type of racing. Like you can't tell me, Will, that you haven't caught screamers on Bradley Lightnings, right?
Oh, that's some of the best runs I've ever
had. Right. Yeah. So it's like it's just a different race and a different feel.
That's key, right?
Yeah.
That's why I live my life on, because I'm so big. Mass moves mass, and that's the world that I live in.
Yeah. So, I mean, there is exciting things coming up for Montauban with some 2-day races coming up in June and July and a bigger race in September. And it's just, bringing Southern California or the U.S. Outrigger Championships in Southern California, Catalina to Newport, is an unlimited only race.
Right.
We have unlimited only.
Officially. Last couple of years.
Yeah. You know, unlimited
that's
only.
That's so smart. From a safety standpoint,
it just makes it
the smartest thing ever.
Yep. It's easier for us to transport to do everything. You know, and so when we made that decision, it was easy. And there's enough boats. We made that decision because we knew there was enough boats in California for us to supply even the clubs that didn't have unlimited canoes.
Okay, you know? Let's be honest about paddling. People overcompensate their own reality of what they're capable of doing or what they're not.
Yeah.
And if you limit to unlimited canoes in certain amount per club, whatever they register, whatever.
Yeah.
It takes a club's borderline people out, puts the right people in. I'm not promoting exclusion, but what I'm promoting is smart paddling.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
You cannot put 10 extra boats on the water to chase canoes across the channel just to make sure people are safe.
Yep.
It's bullshit.
Yep, I agree.
It's a bullshit deal.
Yep.
It's a liability.
Yep.
It's just a problem.
Yep.
So train your people better. And put them in the equipment that's going to race the race, and then register. Simple, right?
Yep.
I hate to say it. I don't like to exclude anybody, but it's just a simple thing,
right?
Yeah.
No.
I mean, it's not really. It's not excluding. No. You're choosing to be inclusive.
Right.
Yeah. Everybody is welcome. You just need to know your limits.
Got
Hawaii is so different than California, it's just going to be a system where you just have to check yourself, you know.
But you're thrown if when you're in Hawaii, you're
totally different.
You talk about it.
You're thrown so much more into reality quicker than you are in California, typically. Where if you're in Hawaii, there's
most of the time you're going to find yourself in a scenario that you're not going to find yourself in California.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Well, and, well, that's, and honestly, to bring back to the California VA series, right? Or the VA California series, I keep getting that.
Much yeah. Right.
But, you know, V1 paddling is intimate, right?
Yeah.
And
intentional.
Intentional. And like to piggyback what Will is saying, you know, paddling in Hawaii is very intimate. You know,
yep.
It's not just, it's not just your technique and your mechanics. It's what's the tide doing? You know, what is
so many factors?
What is a lot of variables? Yep. Yeah. What are the conditions? And a lot of us paddlers in California, we kind of take that for granted. We're always following the person in front of us. We're not really paying attention to.
It's a lot of flat water.
Yeah.
Grind.
Yeah, and Hawaii's a different story, right?
Well, yeah.
So it's. I think it's pretty neat that. That's what our sport provides.
I agree. You know, it's diversity, overcoming diversity, fun watching things happen, seeing differentials in the whole world. You know, it's like you watch guys kind of moving around through the pack and how they do things and how they interact, and it's pretty fun.
Yeah. And it's also pretty neat that, you know, we got all these new race series,
yeah,
such as the one we're talking about in the Manawa in back home.
Good
and,
deal,
There's more things than we
anticipated
ever had or anticipated.
Yeah.
Opportunity.
The tough part is that when you're looking at new stuff, it's hard to plan and talk about those things because there's so much culture around certain things that it's hard to promote and grow without having bad negative feedback on it. You know,
yeah, you would get like the Henry Ayal race, right? And then the Molokai Hoi is like 2 weeks before that, and then you know you throw in like different kind of races, you know, like a monoball. I don't know what the race schedule is, but it, you know, it. Some people, there could be some opinions on it. Right?
If you could give, I'm stealing this from another podcast I listen to, but I'm going to ask each of you individually.
Yeah, go ahead.
Before we wrap up.
Yep.
If you could give advice to yourself, starting with Joe, then we'll go to you, Justin.
Okay.
If you could give your 16-year-old self any piece of advice, what would it be? This doesn't have to be paddling related.
Yeah.
It's really good.
16. Question. Think about 16. What were you doing?
You're up on Eva Beach. Skateboard in hand.
Skateboard in hand.
Well,
skateboard and foot, paddle in hand. You know, riding to canoe practice.
What you know now.
Yeah. You know, it's fine. I can't help but to bring this back to paddling, but maybe I could relate this to just
being that
first one, right? You know, I spent numerous years trying to be the best paddler or just being narrow-minded on goals that are right in front of me, right? Like, hey, like you got to reach this deadline or, you know, I'm competitive here and you're trying to be the best at whatever activity I'm doing, right? Mm-hmm. Paddling, track, football, whatever it may be. But what's interesting is all those lessons that I went through all that activity taught me how to, it was lessons to be the best person I could be, right? So I can't help but to think back from being the 34-year-old version of myself to 16 years old. And it was like, yeah, no, you know, all these lessons were just there to help you to be the best person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you know, the older you get, the more you realize your kuleana, your responsibility. Mm-hmm. And you know, my goal was always, you know, I wanted to grow the sport but I also wanted to be the best paddler I can be. But maybe by growing and
perpetuating the sport
and being the best person that I can be.
That's right.
So yeah, I think to kind of wrap it up as just keeping an open mind and not just narrowing in on what's in front of you. It's just keep an open mind because things change all the time, brother. You know, it's like sometimes you're going downwind and the current shifts on you, and then you're going upwind. And sometimes you got a rudder, and sometimes you don't have a rudder. So
yeah,
it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. What about you?
Like something,
Justin.
What was the question again?
Go back to when you're 16. What? Knowing what you know now, what advice would you give yourself? Looking back,
it's a good question. When I was 16, I would have, if I was 16, or let's say, if my son was 16 and I was my dad at the time, I would have, I don't know. You know, my dad was so supportive of me with whatever I did. So, at 16 years old, which was like 17, 18 years old later, a couple of years later, I left the mountains and, you know, wanted to go do something on my own. My dad was so supportive. So, I think the hard thing for me is that every day, even to this day in my life, and I'm 45, I'll be 45 in April 20th.
That's right, Virginia.
You're a 420. That's right.
Same with Woody.
I every day think about my dad, and I think about those things. And honestly, my dad never had advice for me. He never ever had.
I'm not asking what your dad would have had advice. I'm asking what you would tell yourself.
Oh yeah, that's a good question.
30 years ago, 29 years ago.
You, I don't care about your dad. I don't care about your mom. I don't care about your friends. What would you tell yourself at 16, knowing what you know now?
16 years old, to pay attention to what's around you and listen to what the uncles are telling you.
That's the shit I want to know.
Because there is so much knowledge in the old world.
Yes.
And I feel like I'll cut this out in a little bit, but there's so much knowledge in the old world that you don't understand when you're that age.
You don't.
You just kind of like dance around it and just kind of apply it when you can. And at my age right now, 40 something years old, 44 years old, I feel like there's all this knowledge I was given to me when I was 16, 17 years old. I didn't apply it till where I'm at today. And there's so much to learn today.
Yeah.
Even from the old generation that's still alive, there's so much involved, you know? And if I could tell myself at 16, I would say, listen closely. Pay attention and do what's best for you and your family. That's what I would tell my 16-year-old self. That wouldn't change anything I did. But that's what I would do for sure. Oh, yeah.
The broadcast brought us.
Yeah.
Wrap it up.
Cannot thank you enough for being on.
How many hours have we been on?
How much do we owe you for this therapy session? No, guys, thank you guys so much for coming on. We need to make this a normal thing after the next V1 race, after Buffalo Relay.
Yeah.
You know, make it a normal thing. So thank you guys so much for coming on. Okay, this is where we cue the music. Yes, go for it.
I just want to say that I appreciate that we are at this whole nother venture of our lives, right?
We're at your house, dude.
Yeah,
we're at your house.
But we're talking to like really cool people.
Yeah,
have really good perspective on things. And I think it's a really cool thing.
It is.
And
it's really cool. We have a rainbow going on over here.
Don't ask.
Proud that. Like, we all have these common interests and we're friends. And it's really cool.
Yeah. No, it's great. This is shit. And just to circle back one more time.
Yeah, circle back.
Let's just, a hole.
like Justin, having you in our lives, like later in life, yeah, like the number of times
refreshing
you've been just there in the background, like I'm here if you need me, knowing that you're there. Cool. And then I have you to like lean on, go back to, hide behind, you know, just means so much to be able to do that.
Let me just say this. Everyone gives me shit about having a big belly, but I'm gonna tell you, I can kiss some ass in the
right
floor.
Right?
We're not recording anything.
Kick some ass in the real world.
Yep. No, thank you guys for coming on. This was so much fun.
You guys are important people. It's fun to have a conversation, right? What do you feel?
Yeah, no, yes. What an unbelievable platform, right?
Right.
To be able to talk about what we love to do on our free time and the people that we love and the people that, right, you know, played a big role as a guiding light to us and, you know,
for sure. It's, yeah,
it's pretty neat.
Yeah, right on.
Yep. That's
good.
We are.
Holy shit, what was that, like 2.5 hours long?